Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide, the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Wednesday hump day. It is the 8th of February, 2023, and that means it is crossover day here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We have Pat Kreitlow of Up North News standing by. After that, as always, on a Wednesday, Trygve Olsen, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. And later on in our second hour, we have Bill Leaders, has a great article this month in the Isthmus Magazine talking about the Supreme Court race. We will get to all of that in just a minute. But weather is in the news this morning on this presidential visit day here in Wisconsin. I want to let you know if you're in southwest Wisconsin today, you are under a winter storm watch today. Maybe 4 to 8 inches of snow total, but by the time it's all said and done, perhaps more locally. So if you're driving tonight, like Pat Kreitlow, are you driving down tonight, Pat? Wait a minute.
Now I'm going to get there, got to drive to get ahead of the weather.
Yeah, your mic was off for a second. But yeah, it's supposed to come in tonight. So yeah, the worst of it is kind of from the driftless RCO land and then up to the Dells and then down to here. So maybe 8 more inches of snow here and there in southwest Wisconsin. Otherwise, in Wausau, beautiful Wausau in the central part of the state, and in beautiful Amory, today looks like mostly sunny skies and highs are near between 39 and 40 degrees. So yeah, if you have to drive anywhere, get there early tonight as the weather will move in just after rush hour is what they're saying in parts of the state this afternoon. As we mentioned, the talented Pat Kreitlow of the Up North News joining us as he does every Wednesday. What is new on Lake Wissota, Mr. Kreitlow?
Well, thankfully, not snow like is happening up there. But again, it's nice. It's sunny. Well, like we always say, we're one day closer to spring. And of course, we're still taking in what all, you know, happened last night with the State of the Union address, which I think you described quite aptly as others did in terms of some of the content of it. Some of the content of it was you're the one that said it, that it's the kind of record Donald Trump would like to run on in terms of what the priorities are.
We had Bill McCosh on, former Secretary of Commerce, last night, and Republican strategist. I asked Bill, I said, tonight was Biden with Buy America, get the supply chains back from China, lots of deals, record jobs, non-college workers. I mean, Trump would have loved to work on that. And I know where your area up in northwest Wisconsin or north central Wisconsin, those are themes that ring true. Yes or no?
They are themes, and they are themes that people should expect from both parties. And I don't want to, hijack your show here and bring Trygve in too early. But
hey, he's here. Why not?
He worked. Good morning. He worked for one of my opponents, former state senator Dave Zien, and yet we all find that we agree on certain common issues. And so I wanted to share this story. When I left the job at Channel 13, and people knew I was thinking about running for some sort of office, but nobody knew if I was a Democrat or a Republican because I took very seriously the work I was doing as a journalist. And the way I described it to folks back then is, I would probably have called myself a liberal Republican if such a thing existed anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to speak for the Lincoln Project or anything, but I would hazard a guess that there's some folks saying, if there was a way to bring back liberal Republicans and whatever you would call mainstream conservative Democrats, I think a lot of us would do it in a heartbeat and get a more robust debate, not a vicious one, and actually reach agreement on some of the things like what the president outlined and what other Republicans would like to run on. I could be wrong, Trygve, but that was my thought on it.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I still, people ask me all the time, well, you're not a Republican anymore. And I'm like, well, the Republican Party kind of left me. Mm-hmm. I'm still a Tommy Thompson-esque conservative. I still believe that we should go out and solve problems. I still believe we should, like Ronald Reagan did, stand up to the Russians globally. But I think we need to solve problems. And that was Biden's speech last night. It was about solving real problems. And it wasn't liberal necessarily or conservative. It might have slanted a little more base to where he is, which would be center left. But you're totally spot on.
And then you need Democrats like me, as I've said since, again, going absolutely back to my Senate campaign, that when the time is right, I will be there to donate the first dollar to put up a statue of Tommy Thompson somewhere up here along Highway 29, because he understood the importance of that, not just from a safety standpoint, but from a commerce standpoint. And just now you see the opposition to just basic infrastructure. And it's just unfortunate that in the quest to have zero taxes and zero spending, you don't have people building. So Todd, I guess that's why we all look at some of those themes from last night's speech and say, let's literally build off of that.
I asked Joe Zepecki this last night on our broadcast. He was on the panel, a Democratic strategist. And I don't care whether it's Tony Evers with the handling of the COVID-19 in Wisconsin and getting unemployment down to record lows in Wisconsin and infrastructure here, or whether it's Joe Biden with infrastructure nationally. The question I ask, I'll ask you as a former Democratic legislator and a guy on the inside of the Dem Party, why are Democrats so historically bad at touting themselves? Because Republicans are great at it. And it seems like Democrats just always, that's not fair to say always, too often.
No, it is actually.
They don't do a good enough job of cheerleading for themselves.
It is true. And I think a lot of it is, how do I say this in a way that we embrace our inner nerd and we're all the time thinking about that as opposed to thinking about the campaign, and our poor consultants and managers finally have to drag us along and say, hey, would you campaign for a bit? And then we go, oh, yeah, we're supposed to be doing that too. And it's been a flaw on that side of the aisle for quite some time. It's still there to a degree, but not nearly as much as it used to be.
I mean, I told Bill last night.
Go ahead. I have one insight on that, Todd.
You got 30 seconds.
You know what? As a Republican who's now been working a lot with Democrats, Democrats are high-minded and want to talk about policy. Republicans build narratives.
Very good. Stay with us. Thank you, Pat. Back with more Trigby after this. Have a good day. Welcome back to the Todd Lawball Show. It is now 15 past the hour of 8 o'clock on a Wednesday, the 8th of February, 2023. Glad to have you along on this hump day. Thanks to Pat Kreitlow for joining us as always on Wednesday and on Wednesday as well. We have the one, the only Trigby Olson, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project nationally here, former Republican like myself, and now just trying to save democracy and get the job done. Trigby, we always enjoy having you on. How's your week been?
Week's been good. I was a little busy. I had never been to a Jewish funeral growing up in River Falls. We didn't have a lot of Jewish people. And obviously being out here, I've gotten to know a lot more people who are.
Sure.
But I had to go to a Jewish funeral yesterday. And I have to say, as somebody who's gone to a lot of Catholic funerals in Wisconsin that go on for hours, it was really nice because it was a Reformed Jewish funeral and it went quick. And I felt like it was really good experience, right? Like it's a good cultural experience.
Well,
it was sad though. The guy who died was a big deal in Democrat politics. I would have never gotten to know him without the Lincoln Project. And it was fun to see that you had a bunch of Republicans there, but then you had all these luminaries of the Clinton era.
Right. Well, certainly condolences on your loss, but glad you were able to go and have a celebration of life. It's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Last night, the State of the Union address, like we were talking about there with Pat Kreitlow before the break, most of us, at least political nerds, were watching it. I thought, well, I'll skip what I thought at first. What were your first takes of it?
You know, Biden is not a highly gifted speaker typically, right? Like Joe Biden's strength is, you know, he kind of comes across as a regular guy. Sometimes maybe too much so, like it's almost he's trying to be, but to a large degree that's what he is. He's not Barack Obama, he's not Bill Clinton in terms of his oratory. He might not even be George W. Bush, but he really found his voice last night, and he found his voice in part because he was able to divide the Republicans, and in part because you had people like Marjorie Taylor Greene who demonstrated exactly the points he was trying to make.
I think for those, we mentioned this before, but for those who might not know, Joe Biden was born with a severe speech impediment, a severe stutter. And I don't know if you ever read the article. It was in The Atlantic when he ran in 2020. It was a great article because the reporter was also a stutter. And Biden allowed himself to be interviewed without stopping the stutter. And they actually wrote it that way. They wrote the stutter in the article by both Biden and the interviewer. It was difficult to read, but it was illuminating. And for me, it was for a guy who was also born with a speech impediment, it was inspiring. And I think that people who try to make this out like he's, you know, senile or whatever, the guy, every time he's in front of a camera or out in public, he has to consciously think about not stuttering. I mean, that must be exhausting. So I think that's the important part to remember when you watch Joe Biden speak.
I saw a video of him with a boy who had a stutter, was stuttering, and just a young kid, and him talking to this kid, and it literally it moved me to tears. Yeah. I mean, he was, he has a level of compassion from certain elements of his life experience when he was talking to the parents of the guy who had been shot recently in Memphis, whose name is slipping my mind.
Tyree. Yep. I got it right here. One second. Tyree Nichols. Yep.
Tyree Nichols. Yep. I'm sorry about that. But when he was talking to the parents, right?
Yep.
Like most politicians would struggle to pull that off because they probably hadn't spent time with the person. You could tell that he likely had spent some time with the parents, like real time. And second, he can empathize with what it's like to lose a child, right? Which is something, you know, far too many have that experience, me being one of them. But it changes you. And the fact that he can do that and he effectively talked about that, again, the contrast, critically important.
I was texting last night with friends of mine who used to work at the Capitol, a couple who are not, you know, particularly Republicans or Democrats, kind of a more of a middle road person, and not necessarily political junkies. And they even said, this is one of the best State of the Union speeches I've ever seen, because he hit every mark, because he was able, probably one of the most effective uses of the gallery I've ever seen, to weave in the story and introduce the person. That could get really hokey, right? I.e. Donald Trump. Some people could do it, some people can't. I thought exactly what you said, because, I mean, he never wanted to be the mourner in chief, but you're right. He has a level of compassion that few of any modern day presidents could possibly possess.
Well, think about that versus, you know, Trump, Rush Limbaugh, for right. God's sakes. I mean, right. We're on radio right now, and, you know, I liked Rush. Rush was a great entertainer. People sometimes mistake him, including people we know probably, for being some ideologue or something else. At truth, he was an entertainer. That's what it was. It was entertainment politics.
Right.
He could have just as easily talked about sports.
He did for a while. It was the start of his career. Yeah,
yeah, he did. But the truth of the matter is that somebody like that versus the kinds of stories Biden was weaving in, those are real American stories.
I thought
just the way that Limbaugh just wasn't, right?
Right. And again, to have Medal of Honor, for goodness sake, I mean, up on the balcony, that was just ridiculous. But right. Anyway, getting back to last night, I thought it was masterful. I've only seen Biden in person once. It was at a Tammy Baldwin fundraiser here a few years ago, and he spoke for about 45 minutes. And I told people that weren't there, having gone and watched him live, I said he was, quote unquote, you know, fiery Uncle Joe for maybe 5 to 8 minutes of the 45. For the rest of it, he was just talking like this, just talking like, hey, we got to get back to having a better country. It was like sitting and talking to your great uncle, telling war stories, how great the country is. He just comes across kind of quiet and sincere, like we actually got to help people. And then he stayed around after that speech of 45 minutes for probably another half hour to 45 minutes talking to people on the line. And that was what was so interesting to me last night. He was in the chamber last night for over an hour, talking to members on the floor and actually doing business.
Yeah, one of the things when I worked for IRI and McCain, you know, we'd bring people from places like Belarus or Ukraine or Russia back to the States, and Biden was chair of Senate Foreign Relations. And so I sat in meetings with him, with Belarusians and some others. And, you know, it wasn't, those meetings weren't fiery Uncle Joe. They were just a really compassionate guy who cared about democracy. Really came across in a different way than McCain, because McCain, of course, had that common experience of the Hanoi Hilton, but came across as really caring. And he had studied up on whatever the country was, so he knew details. Yeah, just, you know, not that. There's a very human element to Joe Biden. And sometimes I think the reporting class, you know, they talk about regular guy Joe. What they're really trying to get at, maybe not very well, is that sort of, he has some experiences that allow him to connect to common people that others don't.
I thought he came across well last night. Get your thoughts on this. We talked about it on the crossover side on Pat's show before, but last night Biden started off, first of all, congratulating Kevin McCarthy on the speakership. I thought that was a great tip of the hat. And again, just these bipartisan themes of buy American, supply chains back from China, lots of deals, record jobs, non-college workers. You know, I mean, Biden obviously has some economic numbers he has to work with, and that's what Benji Sarlin of Semifold last night commented on Twitter. But he's fighting on ground that Trump would love to fight on, and he's got some of the numbers to prove it, and some of the numbers to go back and fall on and say, hey, look it up yourself. I mean, he said that from the dais last night.
Yeah, this is the thing, is that that speech, you know, Donald Trump could have given it, would have liked to given it. He would have given it in a much crueler sort of way that wouldn't have really been about helping those people, right. I think. Right. But yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, it was a traditional center left, center right speech. Mm-hmm. And I think it will resonate in the states that matter. I mean, along the lines that matter, right? Because at the end of the day, people forget, really, there's about 700,000 people across Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin who are going to decide the next presidential election.
Mm-hmm. And today he comes to Wisconsin as a strategist yourself, who's worked a lot of national campaigns. Good move, bad move? What does it say to people in Wisconsin that Joe Biden makes his first stop after the State of the Union here?
Well, if I wanted to be a partisan pundit, I would say brilliant move, blah, blah, blah. I think the truth is it's an obvious move. It does, again, like, people want to make this stuff a lot more complicated than it is. At the end of the day, you know, I said 700,000. That's probably the universe. The actual number of people across those states, those three states that are going to decide this, are, you know, 60, 85,000 people, maybe 100. And they're a universe of about 700 who, you know, kind of could go either way. You know, a lot of them are in Wisconsin. And where he's going in Wisconsin, I think that makes sense because, you know, you can generate a pretty good crowd because DeForest is close enough to Madison that you can get a bunch of people out there. And yet it's still in kind of that swing territory.
He's going to a union workshop today in DeForest to talk about jobs and manufacturing and infrastructure here in the state of Wisconsin. We will carry that for you live. Terry Bell, the news director for Civic Media, and myself will anchor that. We'll break into programming across the Civic Media Network today when it happens. We were told originally noon. It appears now, and Trivi knows how these things go, it appears now maybe closer to 1:45. So just have your radio on, have your streaming services on, and whenever they decide to do it, we'll break in and give it to you.
How about I would suggest he might be speaking about 2:00, and it sounds like they got weather, which may throw the whole thing into a further level of distress. Although I would guess that Air Force One can probably land in any snowstorm.
Yeah, that's probably pretty. Yeah, have you ever been on Air Force One?
I have never been. It's on my bucket list and has been, but I have never been.
McCain ever tell you any stories about being on it, or any things you can actually share?
You know, not McCain or people like that. I do know people during the Bush years who served in different spots that got to fly on Air Force One. And I mean, it's apparently a really cool experience because it's better than United First Class or Coach. I know that. You walk in and there's a nameplate on your seat. You get to order whatever kind of food you want.
And, it's fantastic.
Actually, but I guess the president does have some say over that, because the one person told me during the Bush years, it was always Texas barbecue on Air Force One. So I don't know.
That's fantastic. Speaking of former President Bush. We're running out of time up here for the first segment. We'll talk about it more after the break. But I want to talk a little bit about Republicans on the floor last night. I also want to talk about the Republican response from now Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders last night. That we'll wait till we come back after that. This, but Republicans in 30 seconds. What was your knee jerk reaction from watching the Republican Party conduct themselves last night?
You know, I watched the person that I have had the most exposure to, which is McConnell. And, Biden was using his buddy Mitch. It was sort of like a bar conversation with some people.
Yeah, exactly. We'll come back with more. Speaking of, we'll pour a drink here and invite you back. Stay with us. You're on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. Time is now 8:33, just past the bottom of the hour. We're glad to have you along on the Civic Media Radio Network. The day after the State of the Union address, we're discussing that with the senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, Trygve Olson from Wisconsin, been around the world, literally and back, and now helping democracy flourish across the United States of America. Happy to have you on, as always, on Wednesdays, Trygve, talking about the State of the Union. Let's talk a minute about the Republican response offered by Sarah Huckabee Sanders, now Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, last night, and just Republican mood in general, which I found just offensive. But let's start this. This was what the fine governor from Arkansas had to say as she kicked off her Republican response last night.
Most Americans simply want to live their lives in freedom and peace. But we are under attack in a left-wing culture war we didn't start and never wanted to fight.
That's how she started off. What do you think of that, Trygve?
So, you know, the first part about Americans want to live their life in peace, that there's nothing, you know, that's true. Right. All of us. Ukrainians wanted to, too. The idea that then she pivots it into that the culture war, you know, like the idea that it's a war. Anybody who turns on their TV and sees what was going on in Dnipro yesterday, that's a war. What's going on about culture here in the U.S. isn't a war by any stretch of the imagination. But that has been something that the right has been pushing. And to be honest, you know, the drivers to some degree of it, the idea that it wasn't started by the right, both sides have some complicity in this. It isn't, you know, both sides are demanding, and this is where the extremism comes in, and particularly on the right, they're demanding, I get all of what I want, and the other side gets none of what they want, when democracy is built on finding consensus and compromise. And it's the right that has been striving to overturn things around which compromise has been built, in some cases, for over 50 years. And now we're back in Wisconsin debating an abortion law that was from what, 18... I don't know.
1870 something, I think. Yeah, it's just archaic law before the turn of the century, before the last century.
I mean,
century.
It's just ridiculous, right? That's what's driving this. But I get it. Sarah, you know, before she became a political personality, was a political operative. And then she kind of became this political personality under Trump. And here's the thing you got to understand. I'm not sure how much of a true believer in MAGA she is. She worked for Tim Pawlenty, for God's sakes.
Now there.
That's when I first met Sarah.
That's a very interesting thing that nobody talks about. Give us a little insight on that. Because this is exactly, I've talked about this show before, the hypocrisy.
All these guys.
The hypocrisy of some of these MAGA people. They're not all conservative. They're opportunists.
Well, there's two kinds, to be honest, Todd. There's those who were like C-team, C-level players right. who suddenly found an opportunity to be in the big leagues, right? It's like some guy who's playing, I don't know, major league, he's playing B-ball in Toledo, who suddenly has a chance to be pitching in the World Series, right?
Right.
And they have no ability to throw the ball to be playing at that level and having, you know, I don't know, you know, Aaron Judd hitting on him. But and then there's the ones who were kind of on the precipice of, you know, the major leagues, who or were in the major leagues, who saw an opportunity to go to a whole different level.
Right.
And just they didn't believe any of it, but it was economically a smart move.
That's the
real truth of it. Probably not popular with, but
it's the truth. I mean, and you've been in some of these rooms, you've seen some of these people, you've seen their evolution from kind of like middle of the road, decent people to just complete nut jobs because, again, they don't believe it. I mean, that's why I used to tell people, you know, a lot of these people that put money into this stuff, the Koch brothers or whatever, they don't give a crap about abortion. They don't give a crap about fundamental Christian rights. They just want their taxes cut, and it's money stuff. But they haven't figured out a way to buy the elections totally. They still need people to actually vote and as somewhat of a grassroots effort. So they go to these nut job people on the fringes and they say, oh, yes, we believe in that, and we'll give you all kinds of money, right or wrong.
Yeah, no, totally right. And, you know, to the point about the State of the Union and the piece that was brilliant about what Biden did is he stood up there because you had both of those factions in there and divided them.
Right.
You know, when he was doing the My Friend Mitch, which they are friends. We talked about this, I think, on the last show. Mm-hmm. Right. Like only a Republican who got invited to Bo Biden's funeral was Mitch McConnell. Right. So like they are friends. And but Mitch McConnell, you know, like he comes from that business wing. He's a traditional Reagan-esque sort of conservative who Democrats hate because he's highly effective at getting things done. You know, he had Joe Biden put lumping him or forcing him to distance himself from Marjorie Taylor Greene. And, you know, you had the Romney Santos thing. Right. Like Mitt Romney and George Santos don't belong in the same room. Now, here's the thing. If you're a Republican out there who's listening and you're thinking, you have to understand you're not in the coalition that you were in 1980 or 1990 or during the Bush years. You're in a coalition with a whole bunch of people that probably who've taken over the party, who don't stand for the things that you stand for.
You brought up Mitt Romney last night, and again, this as a guy who loves the pomp and circumstance and tradition and all that part of the of Congress, you know, a lot of people are sick of it. I just never get sick of it. I like to watch the things that aren't planned. And last night on the way in, so if you're not familiar, the House of Representatives, of course, hosts the State of the Union address. The Senate then is invited over. Of course, they don't have permanent seats in the House because they're in the Senate. So the Senate walks down the middle aisle and into their assigned seats in the House chamber. And last night, for some odd reason, George Santos, the nut job fraud from New York, who is now under ethics investigation in the House for basically everything he's ever said, he finds himself on the aisle. And that's a coveted seat, as Travey will tell you. Some people will wait there, you know, hours to get on the aisle because they want their picture taken with the president. They want an autograph. They want to give him something or whatever. George Santos somehow slithers his way into the aisle. And as Mitt Romney, Senator Mitt Romney's coming in, they had an exchange. And lip readers, as reported, apparently Romney said to him, "You should be ashamed. You should be ashamed." And Santos looked at him, in words we can't necessarily say on the air, but he said, "You're a bleep, a part of your anatomy, you know, your posterior." And that was the exchange there. So then afterwards, after the State of the Union was done, out in the hallway, the gaggle of reporters came up to Senator Romney and asked him about what he said and what he thought of George Santos. And this is what Mitt Romney had to say.
You just said you don't belong here.
Yeah.
Why did you say that?
I didn't expect that he'd be standing there trying to shake hands with every senator and the President of the United States. Given the fact that he's under ethics investigation, he should be sitting in the back row and staying quiet instead of parading in front of the President and people coming into the room.
Did he respond to you?
He says he embellished his record. Look, embellishing is saying you got an A when you got an A-. Lying is saying you graduated from a college you didn't even attend. And he shouldn't be in Congress. And they're going to go through the process and hopefully get him out. But he shouldn't be there. And if he had any shame at all, he wouldn't be there.
Why did you make a point to say that, though? I mean, it was kind of out of your way to
say
that.
He was standing right there in the aisle, shaking hands with everybody.
Did he respond to you?
He may have. I didn't hear anything he said.
I hear that Kevin McCarthy has not called on him to resign.
Yes.
I think that's pretty much the end of the clip there, Aaron. So there you have Senator Mitt Romney from Utah, finally a Republican, just, you know, taking the initiative to just look the guy in the eye and say, you don't belong here. You're an embarrassment. And apparently reporting last night from reporters on the floor with the president as he entered the chamber that the president of the United States stared George Santos in the eye, didn't shake his hand, and walked on. So that's, right. That's so cold. I thought that was fantastic.
I think it's, I mean, the thing about Romney is Mitt Romney is like, whether you like him or not, how he's perceived by the masses versus what he's like when you meet him as a person. Like, he's a really nice man. He's just a really nice guy. But I think the important thing in that exchange is that, again, it highlights the fact that the Republican Party, and you saw this with Trump going after DeSantis, like he started in with the DeSantimonious stuff again yesterday. They're a marriage that doesn't want to be together. And the crack up is, I think, likely. Now, what they are going to try and do is double down on hate of the other side and whataboutism. And, you know, as we talk through this today, Todd, I think the genius of it, and this goes back to like what Tommy Thompson used to do. I hate to be the old guys who are always opining about Brett Favre or my dad, Bart Starr, right? But because that's what I'm doing. But like, he was taking issues off their plate and reaching out. And there's a lesson in that. Quite frankly, I think Tony Evers and his team could take a little bit of that lesson. Gretchen Whitmer's been living it.
100%. A couple of things I want to get to. I found the quote finally I wanted to from Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You brought up this hate and division thing. I think this was the second or third line in her speech last night. She said, quote, Sarah Huckabee Sanders in a Republican response last night, quote, awoke. She was talking about what the opposition was, this culture war. And she said, quote, they're a woke mob that can't even tell what a woman is, unquote. I mean, how despicable. I mean, let's just pick on transgender kids, LGBTQ people, and just make it about, you know, about that. I just thought it was absolutely despicable last night. And she went on just this, as you said, just this hateful, negative tone. And then she tries to be all sincere. And she gets real quiet and tries to talk like Bill Clinton. And it's sick.
Talks about what a good Christian she is. Yeah. She clearly, I mean, I get it. I went to grew up going to Ezekiel Lutheran Church. So maybe it's a little different, but like that. You're supposed to be nice to all humans.
Yeah, even the Pope, and a couple other religious leaders last week came out and said homosexuality is not a sin, and we should be. And I think the Pope actually said, I don't want to misquote the Pope, but to paraphrase, he said, after reading the four Gospels, I don't see anything about that. You know, I mean,
well, it's risky business for me, Todd, a little bit, because as you know, I set my mother's, who lives in Hudson, her new clock radio to the AM station so that she could be having us come on.
And we appreciate that.
And so it's a little risky where I'm about to go here, but I'm going to tell you a story. This is the thing, you know, and I love my mother greatly. But my mom was very much a three strikes and you're out, throw away the key kind of person, until one of her former students, who she really liked, got himself into a little bit of trouble running a Ponzi scheme and got 20 years. And my mom is a wonderful person. She writes to this person on a regular basis at a federal pen and really cares deeply about him. She also is very much like, why does he not get a chance to make amends, and why does he have to be there so long and all the rest of it? It's very different when it's someone you know. And so for the people who are listening to this, when you hear talking points like woke mob and, you know, don't even know what a, you know, boy or a girl is, all of this, I want you to think about when they do that, somebody that you know in your life, it doesn't even have to be somebody that you know well, their circumstances, but personalize it as somebody that you have had experience with. And I'm telling you, that no matter where you are on the political spectrum, you probably have somebody who you care about on some level in your life who's gay or who's committed a crime or has made mistakes. And you juxtapose that against what you say on Sundays because the best sermons aren't the ones that are listened to in the pews on Sundays. They're the ones that are lived by the people in the pews throughout the week. And that's what these people are forgetting. And it really irritates me. It's part of the reason why I left the Republican Party. I just couldn't stand the hypocrisy of this.
That's good, brother. That's really good. And I appreciate you saying that. I waited until 38 before I came out. And you know, people, you know, right. And it's like, well, no, I didn't mean you. I think when my boss left the state Senate on his floor speech, one of the things he said, we fear the things we don't understand. And once you get to know someone, that changes the whole perspective. Trayvi Olson, our guest this hour on the show for the Lincoln Project, going to come back and talk a little bit more about the State of the Union, talk about the president's speech to Wisconsin. And I don't know, do we want to talk about Aaron Rodgers and ayahuasca? We'll see. Back after
this. Sending them to the Raiders.
Welcome back to the Tahlil Ball Show. It is 8:50 on a Wednesday morning here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our guest is Trayvi Olson, Senior Advisor of the Lincoln Project. Joining us, as always, on a Wednesday. And, yeah, I'm not sure all Republicans can have the excuse they were drunk when they said certain things, because they say it when they're sober, too. Anyway.
I don't know how Aaron knew that that's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Is it really?
Now, somehow he did. I do know.
Are you spying on my Spotify playlist, probably. I read about how that's a thing. Who's that a thing for? Or is it not really a thing? It's just some guy wrote that. But yeah, apparently people are like doing research on other people based on their shared Spotify playlist. Good Lord.
Well, it's the Chinese balloon. That's what we got off. We got your Spotify playlist.
Oh God, the Chinese balloon.
I mean,
we never talked about the balloon.
Do you want to talk about it quick?
No, I mean, what's to talk about? It got shot down.
Right? I mean, to me, the Republicans had, they thought, well, we have something now to talk about, because I think they had a sense, you know how these things leak in Washington. I think they had a sense of where the president was going to go on the State of the Union. They're like, hey, we can't argue valiantly on some of this stuff, so let's talk about a frickin' balloon. And just make up. So you had Derek Van Orten, the sitting congressman, the insurrectionist from January 6th, who's a congressman in the 3rd District, talking about how he knew as a former military guy that they targeted the actual package, not the balloon. And when a bonehead, Derek Van Orten wasn't there. Last time I checked, he's not on the Intelligence Committee. He wasn't. He's not in the Pentagon. He's just making crap up.
Yeah, he is. That conforms with the narrative. I was a Navy SEAL.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah. He wasn't in the intelligence community. He has no freaking clue. He was a guy who did what people in the intelligence community told him. And furthermore, I can tell you, like, during the Cold War, you know, Russian spy planes flew over the United States and the Pentagon let them do it. And the Russians sometimes let the Americans do it so that they knew what each other was up to. So I don't know what other details were in the middle of this. And this is the other thing. But here's the problem with Derek Van Orten. Like, he has some credibility because, A, he's in Congress, and, B, because people are so slow that they don't think, well, he was a Navy SEAL. He must know. He's not an expert on intelligence. He was an expert on Navy SEAL stuff. If you want to ask him about, you know, going ashore clandestinely in a military operation and conducting, you know, underwater operations, yeah, probably he's got some expertise on that. Doesn't mean he has expertise on, you know, spy balloons or...
Well, and when you watch the video...
That's part of the problem.
It was pretty clear when you watched the video, they did take out the balloon. And apparently President Biden wanted it shot down as soon as it entered the airspace. Defense Department came and said, hey, this is not a great idea because it could kill some people. And so, you know, President Biden did what Republicans keep asking for, which is respect the sanctity of human life. You know, I mean, let's not kill people on the ground. And then I'm not sure if this was confirmed or not. I thought it was confirmed that former Defense Department Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, apparently went on the record and said when these other spy balloons came over from China during Trump's administration, he intentionally said we're not going to tell him because he was afraid what Trump would do.
Right, so, exactly. And was he not going to do anything? Was he going to shoot it down? Like, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It was a ploy.
It gets to the insanity of this. And this is what what our politics has devolved to. And it kind of gets to what we were talking about with Krylo. Democrats are busy talking about policy, the policy of various things. Like, we don't let the balloon, we don't want to shoot the balloon down while it's over American, you know, airspace until it's out over the ocean because it could hurt people on the ground, right? Like, that's talking about policy. Meanwhile, Republicans are building this narrative, you know, Joe Biden's not shooting down the balloon because of, you know, fill in the blanks so that everybody can find something that pushes their buttons on their side. Hunter Biden's laptop, weak on China, doesn't care about America, blah, 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 blah. Right. And so they're building narratives around ridiculous grievance.
Let's talk, though, about 4 minutes left here. Let's talk about this, the message, you know, this, because I think you're absolutely right. The president comes to Wisconsin today, to DeForest, a suburb here of Madison. We'll carry it for you. Latest reporting right now should be around 1 o'clock-ish. We'll break into regular programming. Terry Bell, news director, and I will anchor that for you across Civic Media. But we talked about this, as you said, with Pat Kreitlow. The Democrats historically have done a crappy job of getting out their message. And last night on our panel, we had Bill McCosian, former Secretary of Commerce under Tommy Thompson. And I said this to Bill last night. I said, when you were Secretary of Commerce, you were more popular than Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, and the Leprechaun of St. Patrick's Day combined. Because it got to the point during Tommy Thompson's era that every time you saw Bill McCosian roll up to a small community, he was holding an oversized check for hundreds of thousands or $1 million for your community. I mean, the little town of Yuba out in Richland County, Bill McCosian will never have to buy a drink again after he brought this money for a new sewer system. Tommy Thompson and Republicans were masters at promoting what they did well. What is wrong with Democrats? Why can't we see more of this from Joe Biden, of him going with Mitch McConnell and talking about a bridge and this wonderful infrastructure bill?
Well, I think they're doing some of that. I mean, it begs the question, why doesn't Tony Evers do more of that? I mean, that's the obvious question to me. And I'm not bagging on Evers because honestly, like, you can just tell, like, good guy, you know,
great guy.
Like, he's the guy you want as your neighbor.
Yeah.
If you're in Sheboygan or Plymouth or wherever. But here's the thing. And McCosian would be a good guy to have as your neighbor, too.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, I don't know why. I mean, it's been enlightening for me, right, having worked on the Republican side for all these years. And now with the Lincoln Project, we end up working with Democrats more. I don't understand it because, you know, on the Republican side, you're intuitively taught to build narratives. And it's a little bit like Al Davis's Oakland Raiders. It's just win, baby, right. Whatever it takes. Whereas they want to have, like, these high-minded conversations. I think Biden, though, you know, Biden is a guy who's been in a few fights, like literally when he was a kid growing up. And you saw that last night pitting them against each other. I think he's got to show up in Wisconsin today and just continue that.
100%.
He's not going to be able to go in and do it the way Barack Obama did. I mean, No. If you watch when Barack Obama went into Wisconsin before these last elections and gave his speech, like, he's amazing at it. But Joe Biden can go in and speak to those voters who sit on that Bannon line. Remember, 4% are Republicans. If you can pull 4% of Republicans in the state of Wisconsin, 4-7, you're going to win the state. Joe Biden did it in 2020. Tony Evers got 7% in 2022. Mandela Barnes didn't. And that's why Evers won and Barnes didn't. That's what Biden needs to do. He needs to go in and speak to those people. And he needs to draw the contrast and just basically be like, you know, these guys are playing with you.
I thought
he doesn't have to speak to that big a number of people.
I thought the best parts of his speech last night, some of them were the unscripted ones where he just winged it. And I hope they release Uncle Joe a little bit more and let him be like that a little bit more, because I think he connects.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I would if he makes a play at Republicans when he's there, it's Pitt and Robin Voss versus the rest of his caucus, in the same way he did McConnell versus his caucus.
Trivi Olson from Lincoln Project, we thank you as always. You're off next week, but your boss, Rick Wilson, apparently may be joining us, so we'll look forward to that. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, my friend.
All right, yep, we'll see you, and we'll be live together.
Well, here in Madison Live. Looking forward